This is Freedom Fiends Weekend Edition, broadcasting from the Wormabago Mobile Studio in the depths of Bootleg Bayou, where the swamps meet the sea and revenuers dare not tread. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license, allowing reuse by anyone except governments. You can learn more about that at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org. My name is Ben Stone, and it's very special today. We're going to have Lusander Fien, our beloved Lou. He was recently at the Michigan Peace and Liberty Fest that's sponsored by the Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition, and he interviewed Adam Kokesh. So what you're about to hear is Lou's interview with Adam Kokesh. So without further ado,
I'm here with Adam Kokesh, and he is a former congressional candidate, a member of Iraq Veterans Against the War, and he is on the American Liberty Campfire Tour, and you can check out his website at thefreedomline.com. And if you have a Save Adam from the Man t-shirt, it will never go out of style. Thanks for coming on the show, Adam. Could you tell us a little bit about the American Campfire Tour, what it's about, what you're promoting, and tell us a little bit about your book?
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate the opportunity, but I have to say, you started this introduction with, like, the thing on my resume I'm least proud of, you know, like, I used to be a Republican and ran for Congress once upon a time, and I'm sorry about that, but I'm better now, thank you. So, the American Campfire Freedom Tour has just been amazing. We're two-thirds or so of the way through it now. I've been traveling with my fiance, Macy, and my dog. This is actually our second date, not me and the dog. We've been together longer than that. But with Macy, our first date, you know, we met on Twitter, and she came out to LA and visited for a week, and that was our first day, and our second date was a year-long road trip. And it's really been an incredible experience, and getting to connect with different communities of people who care about this message all over the country. You know, as you heard today, like, being here, Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, you've got a distinct kind of community of people that come together, and what you see that I think I have this amazing luxury of being in touch with as a result of this is how there's a beautiful cultural movement behind the freedom movement of people coming together around this message. So what we've been doing with this book, I wrote Freedom to Be the Easiest Way to Take Someone from Zero to I Get It. And I don't know what role it's going to have in growing the movement, but I know it's going to have a very important role in expanding us into the next demographic of people who are ready to hear this message and need it presented as easily as possible. So I started writing the book when I was in jail. It's 100 pages. It's very short. It's concise. It answers as many of the "but what about this" type of questions as possible in so short a space. It's easy to understand, short sections, irrefutable language. It's in line with the principles of nonviolent communication, and there's no opinion, no wishful thinking, no unnecessary judgment or labels. It's just a straightforward analysis that shares what to me is the most beautiful thing about my understanding of the world that I've gotten from understanding freedom with someone as efficiently as possible. So it's been amazing to see how people are receptive to this, because the culture of the movement has shifted. And I always say that, like any good politician, I see a riot, I jump out front and call it a parade. And in this case, the riot I'm referring to is the cultural shift within the movement that's away from the political, away from "I'm right, you're wrong, zero sum, let's argue," to "let's enjoy life more because of this understanding, and let's be happier, and let's share that with people, and let's win converts, let's grow the movement, let's not just sit around and be right about everything, let's actually do something with that and find what's beautiful about that for us." And people are getting more in touch with that, and that's really cool to see, that people are claiming a kind of emotional and intellectual freedom, and then it's shared much more effectively that way.
Once again, thanks for coming out to the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. How many events like this have you been to on your little tour, little festivals like this, or is it usually just the smaller gatherings?
Well, one of the interesting things about going around and getting a sense of all these different communities, we've got a consensus now that the core of the movement, as I define, is people who can articulate freedom as a principle and at least attempt to apply it consistently, that there's only about a million of us. And it gives you some perspective, you know, 320 something million Americans. And there aren't a lot of big festivals like this, you know, and this is one that's pretty well organized, where, you know, you have several hundred people, you know, you have a real community around it here. And we see in different parts of the country, there are different communities, but there aren't any libertarians in Manhattan. You wake up in Manhattan, what do? You leave. But New Hampshire, you have Pork Fest. You know, we were just at Pork Fest in June, and it was really an amazing experience. And that's the biggest gathering of real freedom activists in the world right now. But everywhere you go, you see that there are different places where people congregate, and, you know, where the conditions are right for people to live more freely, and different communities of activists that come together. And it's really cool to see that it usually only takes two or three, sometimes only one committed person even, to say, I'm going to be an anchor of this community. I'm going to show up every week, or I'm going to show up every month, and I'm going to get everybody out, and I'm going to manage the website, and I'm going to do the email list, and I'm going to be excited about this because it's something that I love that I want to share. And you see that there are those, I don't know, we got to have a good term for them. So, you know, those anchor activists who really hold down communities and make this movement possible. You do see that all over the country, and you see that's all it really takes, you know, to either put together a festival like this or even just you know, a good event for us on the tour.
Yeah, one of the things that I've noticed, and you touched on this earlier today in your presentation, you were talking about you didn't use these words, but our community has a culture of love, because you talk about the nonviolent communication, the peaceful parenting, things like that. And one of the things that's really amazing to me is at these festivals, you meet somebody for the first time. You've never met them before. Maybe you've talked to them on Face Beast or something like that. But you greet each other with hugs.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's beautiful here. I mean, and you see that absolutely, how we relate to each other differently. Actually, here was the first time I asked this question everywhere we go. So spoiler alert, if you're coming to one of my events coming up on the tour, we've got the rest of the Northern Midwest and then the West Coast coming up, and it's all on our website, thefreedomline.com. But we ask people, like, how do you see people living differently in this movement? And we get all of the answers in lifestyle. And I'm not going to tell anybody, but the one that we got here today that we don't often get right away is relationships, and that you have better relationships. And it's not just in romantic relationships, which is obvious, but just in how you relate to people in general. And nonviolent communication is a really foundational tool in that. But even just the realization of being in touch with what it means to be another human being who's deserving of self-ownership and respect for that, like, that really does change your perspective. And when you stay in the negative emotional state and you want to argue with people and you want to play the I'm right, you're wrong kind of games, you lose the opportunity to connect based on that.
Now, you had also mentioned, I hope you'll mind talking about the military time. You are a former Marine, not an ex-Marine, a former Marine, and a combat veteran, and you've battled PTSD over the years. You also mentioned working in a peer support capacity in a program called Vet to Vet.
And well, it was Vets for Vets was the more established training program for people to go through this and be able to lead Vets for Vets events or retreats or regular weekly meetups in their communities. For us, as Iraq Veterans Against the War, we did our own spinoff of that, or our own version of that, which was Homefront Battle Buddies.
In your personal dealings with the PTSD and the horrors of combat, and also being lied to by the government to get sent into combat, what sort of things have you done for yourself to work on your recovery and to create your new normal in a better way? And what would you share with other veterans that are dealing with it? And maybe they're on the fence on whether they've been betrayed or whether, you know, things just went wrong for no reason whatsoever.
Oh, man. I mean, I could give like a 3-hour answer to that question, but if I could try to sum it up properly to the most important things, I think that from this philosophical perspective, I have a certain bias, and I think you can overcome symptoms without embracing a different worldview. But for me, none of that would have been possible without acceptance of reality, which is that we were suckers, that it's always poor men dying in rich men wars. And being able to accept that and come to terms with that and really just acknowledge what you already know to be true, it's going to be a lot easier to deal with everything else that you have to in dealing with your personal situation. And for me, Iraq Veterans Against War, my activism speaking out was very helpful, taking my experiences and turning them to something for good. And not everybody has that opportunity. But the core of what we're talking about is talk therapy. It is taking what is in your subconscious mind, rattling around, in some ways controlling you, and putting it front and center in your conscious mind so that you control it instead. And you know, we talked about today how MDMA, Molly therapy, if you can do the research on that and seek something as intense as that and do it safely without any liability, then that's worth looking into. But at very least, seeking medical marijuana as an alternative to dealing with symptoms versus pharmaceuticals is something that every veteran who's dealing with any of those specific symptoms needs to at least consider properly for themselves. The information's out there. Use the internet. Google that-ish. And figure out what's right for yourself. Make that decision for yourself. But that process of talk therapy can take a lot of forms. And for a lot of people, it's just having the conversations that give them that understanding and get them to that self of that sort of sense of self-acceptance and self-understanding. But for some, it's through music or art or painting or you know, something else that provides that means of self-expression. So just you know, be open to that and find your own path. And I could keep going, but I just would want everybody who's dealing with that to know that it's a healthy reaction to an incredibly unhealthy environment, or as some would say, a sane reaction to an insane situation, and accepting that about yourself before any kind of judgment or diagnosis is the most important thing to take forward going into dealing with that.
And we're going to break off from Lou's interview with Adam Kokesh for a little trip off to the market. Stick with us. We're going to be right back. We'll finish the interview with Lou and Adam Kokesh as soon as we get back. Stick with us. And Lou's going to come on the show a little bit later, and we'll finish off the show with Lou and I talking about the different things that Lou and Adam talked about.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of lesser world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's fiendphone.com, FeenPhone.com. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiendphone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
And we're back on the Freedom Fiends with the interview with Lou and Adam Kokesh.
What do you think was your turning point when you realized that you were a sucker?
That's a really good question, because I was against the war before the war. I actually went to the day of student walkouts in February 2003. Remember, the anti-war movement was biggest before the invasion, which was March 2003. Jeez, it's really taking it back. And I was pro-occupation, so I volunteered to go, and I was there February, September 2004. And I was a libertarian in a very superficial sense, in a political sense, you know, socially liberal, fiscally conservative, but not in a philosophical sense, which is why I'm so passionate about sharing that particular understanding today, as opposed to winning votes or debates or issues or anything like that. Because if I had, I wouldn't have enlisted. I wouldn't have volunteered to go to Iraq. But it was coming home and joining Iraq Veterans Against the War that really led me to consider the bigger picture, and it was a slow process. It was kind of a settling in. We do ourselves a big disservice in this movement in general when we mythologize moments of waking up or epiphanies, because they rarely happen like that. You know, like I can say that a particular event got me started on a train of thought or motivated me or raised some cognitive dissonance, but it really is a slow, personalized process of accepting a deeper truth that happens in quiet contemplation usually.
Yeah, for me, it was hearing Tom Woods talk about his anti-war views and how he came upon them. And then he recited the War Prayer by Mark Twain. And that had such a unbelievable impact on me that I could not unhear it. And for those that haven't heard it, and you can listen to it on YouTube. Peter Coyote does a rendition of it, and you can also read it on PDF. But it explains kind of in what is seen and what is unseen of what happens in war, because when you pray for our troops to be protected, you're also simultaneously praying for people to get killed on the other side. And when you really think about it that way, it really drives things home. Next up, with you pretty much made a career out of being arrested, for real terroristic acts like dancing at monuments and things like that.
I wish I could say I made a career out of getting arrested. That'd be way easier than the truth. The truth is, you have to make a lot of YouTube videos, and if you're not very good at it, you have to, you know, do desperate things to get people's attention sometimes.
So. But deep down, you are a regular guy, because we are all just men and women. We are not gods. We are not the great man. You know, we're not the mythologies of hearing us on radio or seeing us on YouTube, things like that. What would you tell people about yourself that people would probably be like, oh my God, I had no idea. He is a regular guy.
I'm not going to answer that question. I want to answer it in terms of what I think people sometimes see in me as special, and show people how it's not. And it's my response when people say that I'm brave in getting arrested sometimes. I say it's not true. Courage is important for moments of uncertainty, or for, you know, when you're dumb, you know, like in combat, yeah, you'd be brave or be dead. But activism is not that. And while there is a risk of death in the sense that every time you come into contact with a police officer, every time you go to jail, like your risk of dying goes way up, it's still not significant on a scale of combat even. But what I do that people like mistake as courage is the product of confidence in my calculations instead. And it's that most people have fear somewhere in their math as this X factor, and they never bother to quantify it. Like, how bad really would it be to get arrested and go to jail for a week? Well, really not that bad. You know, like, yes, there's a risk, but is that worth it? Like, you want to make dancing at the Jefferson Monument illegal? Okay, well, I'm gonna bring a camera, let's dance. You know, the worse you're gonna make this, the better video I'm gonna get out of it. And I had no idea that it was gonna be as popular as it was. Like, that was my hits always surprised me. But and I told my producer that no one's gonna watch an 11-minute video of that. But by the way, the version of that video that went viral was the same event from two different camera angles, 5.5 minutes back to back. And I was like, no one's gonna want to watch the whole thing. I was like, you know, people watching were like, yeah, let me see that again from another camera angle. So in terms of everything I do that entails a certain amount of risk.
And we're going to break off right there while we break for the market. We're going to come back with that. I'll back up the recording just slightly so you hear in context what Adam's talking about there. But stick with us. We'll be right back.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains, because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
And we're back on the Freedom Fiends. Finishing up the interview that Lou did with Adam Kokesh.
So in terms of everything I do that entails a certain amount of risk, the first thing that I have in a really sort of boring, mundane, average guy kind of methodology that anybody can apply is calculating those risks in a way that quantifies them. And there's always a certain variability in that, as there is uncertainty with everything in life. And in a way, you could describe these equations as incredibly complex, but the core thing here is recognizing that fear is not an overwhelming X factor. It can be quantified. And the second part of this is being able to calculate the value in terms of how well you want to live and how much you're going to enjoy life and all the extrinsics and all of the other values that we get out of this. And for me, it's even in a very crude sense, a long-term investment in reputation capital when I know that, you know, I'm going to get more YouTube subscribers out of that. And having done thousands of videos now, I'm able to support myself primarily from that income, which at this point now is going to be owned by our nonprofit and entirely go to support the work of the nonprofit. So the extrinsic values for me are all of the other satisfactions that I get out of doing this and the appreciation that I get. I mean, knowing that I could, you know, if I lost my home, which is this 19-foot travel trailer right now, you know, that there are people who would say, you know, hey, Adam, you know, we'll give you a place to stay until you figure out where you're going to land next or where you're going to get on your feet. Or, hey, Adam, you got another project coming up. You know, we'll chip in $100 because we want to see you do another tour. We want to see you do the next thing with the book or the next activism. And, you know, maybe for, you know, the person who doesn't have the incredible luxury that I enjoy in my life of being in this line of work, you know, you still have the ability to calculate that you get more satisfaction knowing that you're not feeding into the system. Like, would you take a pay cut to know that you're not being part of, you know, you're not supporting the war machine? Most people would say, absolutely. You know, would you live, you know, outside of a city in order to give up some of those luxuries but not be subject to the police state when you realize the real cost of that and the real value of being able to breathe easy in a less statist environment? You know, just being able to see all of those things and put those into my calculations, I think that allows me to do things that most people see as unusual, and they're really not.
One of the things I really appreciate is your man on the street interviews, and one of the more popular, more recent-ish ones was the people coming out after seeing American Sniper. And it was really amazing with the ingrained patriotism, blind devotion, blind faith, indoctrination, I guess would be the only way to put it. You managed to turn a few minds in there, and it was a very, well, it was kind of slow, methodical, but tell the listeners how you go about engaging somebody and go into some of the steps, because I mean, it looks like you use the Socratic method and also some nonviolent communication. But if you could explain that, how you do it and why you do it the way that you do.
Well, thanks, and I appreciate that acknowledgement of that part of you know, our production. And my videos, in a sense, have evolved over the years as well. They used to be a little bit more like Mark Dice style, just making people look stupid. And you know, you can do that all day long. You can selectively edit and embarrass people. But what I do, at least even then, you know, even when I do conversations where the point is not to convince someone, because people are very rarely convinced in conversation. Again, it's more in reflection afterward that they're able to adjust their worldview. But sometimes, you know, you put the camera on someone and it like freezes their brain and their current state of mind, and you get to just like poke at their cognitive dissonances and all of their contradictions and look at the camera and be like, don't be this guy. And that's fun. But like you mentioned the American Sniper video more recently, I feel like in the way that I've evolved, it's been in now completing the conversation and actually giving people the opportunity to come to a different conclusion. And the American Sniper one was a little more of a broad examination of the effect. And, you know, the video didn't do very well at first. I thought it's 30 minutes long. I thought it would get, you know, 20,000 views or so and be sort of movement popular or just popular with my audience. No, it was like a dud. I mean, it got like 5,000 views, then 10 the next week. And then people started blogging about it. And then it went up and now it's got over 200,000 views. And there's a rip of it that's got over 100,000 views somewhere else. So it's really cool to see that people are looking for that and that they want a different way of engaging. I think that's a pretty good example of using the Socratic dialogue, which is really simply asking questions to lead people to the conclusions. I don't want to try to explain the Socratic dialogue longer than that. If you want to learn that as a method, look it up. There's tons of work out there and people explaining how that works. And it's a great technique to apply. And I think now in the way that I've changed, you know, I'd rather not do the kind of interviews where it's just like, hey, make someone look stupid. But, you know, can I make a point? Can I win a convert? Can I get someone thinking a different way? And it's really not that hard. It's, you know, anybody can do what I do.
What do you think your success rate is when you engage people on the street in that manner? Maybe they're not going to turn into peaceful anarchists right then and there, but it definitely gets the wheels turning and the cobwebs start smoking and they start thinking, huh, maybe what I've been thinking all my life has been wrong.
Well, I don't think it's always about those people, but they, again, you can't expect people to change their worldview in that short a time frame. It doesn't happen by winning Facebook flame wars or debates or arguments. You know, it comes from quiet contemplation. That's why I wrote the book and what I've experienced from traveling around the country. I mean, you know the joke, right? What's the difference between a statist and a libertarian? About 6 months. And it's, you know, I think it's faster than that now. It's a week of watching YouTube videos and reading Wikipedia articles and people go, oh, now it makes sense. And with the book, again, being the attempt to give people a complete picture as efficiently as possible, I think people are expecting that now. But still, you can only hope, I mean, to use such a corny cliche, but, you know, lead a horse to water, but not make it drink. And there are certain people that aren't ready to hear this message that, you know, you put it in front of them and they will reject it. Their attachment to the violence of the state is such that they can't even hear an alternative. And that's okay. You know, they'll give them their time and they'll get the therapy that they need and they'll come around. But what we need to do is motivate people to take the time to finish the conversation for themselves.
One of the things that my friend and co-host Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, talks about is that the rise in the libertarian movement or anarchist, voluntarist, abolitionist, whatever you want to call it, doesn't come from really hearing the message of liberty. It comes from the intolerance of statism because the tyranny has become so great that the absence of liberty is like an absence of oxygen that you have difficulty breathing. That has brought people to open their minds to, let's say, Ron Paul's message of liberty or Tom Woods, who I think is a lot better.
You could say that's true for the third of a percent that we are right now, but even that, I don't think that's really true. I think what drives most people here to this movement is either that they, and it, you might say that this is the same thing, but a sense of victimization at the hands of the state. And if that's it, then that might be a factor for a lot of people who are already here. But there are way more victims of the state who aren't here, you know, who haven't put this together. So obviously there's some other distinction that has us here. And I think it's a certain intellectual drive, an intolerance for injustice, that when we are wronged, we don't just seek to deal with it, we seek to understand why. And that's worked for, you know, those of us who are here now. Now we need to present the movement, the message in a much more positive way to reach the next demographic, because the state is good at managing discontent. If that was true, then they would be able to maintain that this movement stays flat forever. But that's not the case. The movement is growing exponentially right now. So it's got to be because of other factors, and its connectedness, and its awareness, and its positivity. And it's people coming to this realization naturally because, like you said, the information is out there. It's so much more available now. And I think that's a decent metaphor, but I don't think it really explains what's going on.
Well, I look at it, statism, as a mental illness, much like PTSD, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, substance abuse, whatever. And when people reach that point of they can't do it anymore, when they so-called hit their bottom, that's when they start going into recovery. And the way that I see it is, when I realized that statism was a losing proposition, that no, getting back to the Constitution isn't going to do the trick, and getting just the right people in charge wasn't going to do a trick, that's when I said, you know what, I have to quit taking this drug.
Yeah, I mean, they're all fair analogies, but like even waking up is not a perfect analogy. I mean, I heard someone for the first time ever, and this was secondhand, just the other day, say, well, I woke up and then I got tired and I went back to sleep. And I was like, what? No, it doesn't work that way. You know what I mean? And I don't think that those kind of negative framework analogies really are really helpful.
Okay. What is the full unofficial name of this tour? You told us earlier. This is a hoot.
The American Campfire Freedom Tour, also known as the Adam Kokesh Avoids Probation Officer Tour. I say this wearing this beautiful piece of government jewelry on my ankle. I have a GPS tracking device right now with no restrictions. I mean, it's the greatest example of your tax dollars at work in futility.
I was worried that it might be a targeting system for a drone strike.
Yeah, right, that too. And if I run, there's a little explosive charge that goes off and just takes my foot off.
So kind of like Running Man. Okay, good stuff. All right, well, thanks for coming on the show, and especially thanks for coming out to Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. Any closing thoughts? Tell us, you know, what's on your mind, any message that you want to get out, and once again, give the listeners a spot, a website where they can find all your information and stuff like that.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for that opportunity. It's thefreedomline.com. The book Freedom is free in every digital format possible, including as an audiobook. It's free as an Android application. It's free as a PDF that you can do on your iPhone. It's free in every e-reader format. And it's free if you come to any of our events on the tour. And you can see our tour schedule at thefreedomline.com as well. And I'll just end with this challenge that I've been issuing people on the road about the book, which is to read it. That's not supposed to be the challenge. I know it's 2015. Got to twist people's arm to get them to read a book these days. By the way, it's banned in U.S. jails. You might not think that's a big deal, but it's the only place where Americans still consistently read books. So the challenge is to read it and decide for yourself whether or not it's the most effective way for you to share the message with someone else. And if not, find what is for yourself, because I guarantee that is the activism that you will find the most satisfying.
Okay, I just came up with one more question. And since your book is banned in jails, does that mean that you're banned in jails too?
But I hope so. Yeah, right. No, it means I have to stay in solitary.
Okay, my other question was, you were mentioning deliveries on this tour. And when I heard that last night, I was like, wow, that's pretty darn special. Tell people what the deliveries are.
Oh, well, it was a way for us to raise money for the tour last year, and a really fun way to connect with fans and supporters. So we made it easy. If you came up with $100, we'll come and deliver a signed book and t-shirt personally to your home or place of work or whatever. And a lot of those deliveries have just turned into really fun events. Some of them have turned into big events. Some of them have turned into living room conversations where someone brings their five most statist friends and we work on that. We've won a lot of converts that way, like directly on the tour, and some of those like small events and those direct conversations have been the most fun.
All right. Thanks again for coming on the show, and look forward to seeing you and your work in the future. And maybe I'll catch you up near Bear Saskatchewan, Michigan.
Awesome. Ishpeming.
All right. Take care.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, "You didn't build that"? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
I'm back with Lou. Lou, as you just now heard, the interview with Adam Kokesh from the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest in Michigan. And Lou's with me now, and we're going to talk about Adam and his talk that he gave there at the Midwest Liberty Fest, and we're going to talk about the interview with him, but. First, Lou, good to have you back on the show. Good to be on the show with you.
Hey, it's great to be back with you, Ben, and we sure missed you up there in Michigan, or up here in Michigan. Well, actually down there in Michigan, because I'm like way north up in Bear Saskatchewan. We missed you in the Mitten State.
I really wanted to go. We had hoped that things would work out, and we hoped right to the last minute, and it just... There was just one thing after the other, and we couldn't make it up there. We really want to go next year. We're almost like planning now to try to figure out how we can be up there, because we had so much fun, the other year when we were up there, that we just, and such nice people up there. You guys really have something going on up there in Michigan.
Yeah, it's a really good crowd, and you're not the only one that ran into problems. Our friend Christopher Beardy Meard wasn't able to make it up because he had transmission problems with one of his vehicles, and that really gobbled up a lot of money, time, and energy, and everything else. So I miss seeing him because I only get to see him about once or twice a year. Other people had things come up, illnesses, family situations, so there were a lot of people that just weren't able to make it out. So You're not the only one that fell in that category. But something to highlight out of that is new people that were able to come out that I'd never even met before. And maybe I just recently met them on the internets or something like that. So that was really a blast.
From the picture, it looks like you guys had a pretty good crowd there.
Yeah, I was thinking that the crowd was a little bit smaller. And by the way, not everybody even got into the picture because there were people that were out doing other stuff and herding cats, trying to get them to pose for just work. But there were a lot of new people came there, and I believe that the total attendance was like 10 or 11% higher than last year, even though I didn't think that it was, because I didn't see as many tents in the camping areas that I thought. But a lot of people had rented cabins, and as I said, some people got there late, some people didn't get there. So anyway, yeah, but good time, a little bit of growth, and lots of fun, new friends.
I saw, my wife told me that Dalton, a buddy of ours, was trying to make it up and ended up with a flat tire and couldn't get a tow truck to come out and get him. And I never did hear if Dalton made it up or not. I'll have to ask him about it next time.
He made it.
Oh, he did make it. Oh, cool.
He made it. Yes, cool. He finally made it. He came over to the salt kitchen, and I'm thinking, hey, he looks familiar, but, oh, wait, Dalton. Yeah, he cut his hair, too.
Oh, really? Sorry to hear. Well, everybody's got a life to live.
Yeah, so one fewer hippie this year. But Jamin and Karen were able to make it out. That was really nice.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen them. So, they're pretty fun to be around.
Yep, and also some other Pennsylvanians, Zeke and Elizabeth, made it out there with their children.
Zeke's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, they weren't able to make it out last year, but they got out this year.
I saw Tom in the picture too. Oh, Will, what was that?
Yeah, Tom was only out there for Saturday afternoon, but Will was supposed to make it, but there was another event going on down in Chattanooga or somewhere in that area because of the Marines that were killed at the recruiting station.
Yeah. Well, you know, Will has a lot of work to do. I mean, Will has a very big, for him, it's an actual ministry, and it's really important, and he has, you know, some pretty serious work that he does. So if something like that comes up, he has to drop things and go to it, because that's, you know, it's for him, it's a big deal to do that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And you have to figure he also runs a double ministry, because not only does he do his Islamic ministry, but he also does his Liberty ministry.
Right.
So he's doing outreach to both the Islamic community and the non-Islamic community in both regards for that matter.
Yeah, and he does great work too. So
he does.
In the next hour coming up, we're going to talk about a little bit about Adam Kokesh's talk that he gave there, and about some of the other stuff that went on at the Michigan Peace and Liberty Festival. And, you know, what the general, like, even what the weather was like and what the camping was like. And so maybe if somebody's hearing this and they might be able to get out to the one next year, let's lay the groundwork for that, because it's, trust me, it's really well worth the effort to get out there.
Indeed.
We'll be back after this hour break. Or break for the hour.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Freedom Fiend Weekend Edition, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's Ion Cannon, mounted atop the Wormabago Mobile Studio in the depths of Smuggler's Bayou, where the swamp is alive with 1,000 eyes, and none of them belong to the NSA. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. And you can learn more about that at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org. And with me, by way of Fiend Phone, is Lusander Fien up there in the great north. Lou, welcome back to the second hour.
Hey, it's great to be back. And not only is Freedom Fiends covered by a BIPCOT no government license, so is my assault kitchen.
And that's one of the highlights and of camping with Lou. Go ahead, Lou.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I have to tell you, there was a fair amount of fiendness hanging around the assault kitchen, because not only was I there, but Diana and Christian made it up, and so did Randy England. So we were sitting around the table, and I tell you what, had there been a non-NSA microphone recording all of that stuff, it would have been some very good conversation.
Yeah, I really wish I could have made it up there.
Yeah, we certainly dropped some mad scientists. So, and there were also a lot of other people hanging around joining in on the conversation. So it was really neat. But going back to how we left the first hour, the people that were there are what really makes it. I mentioned Christopher wasn't able to make it. He has the best description that I've ever heard. He says to be in that environment with loving, caring people, you know, even though they don't know each other, they're friends and they treat each other properly and everything else. He describes it as being therapeutic. It's a way to get away from the anger and the hatred and the road rage of what is daily life and statism.
It really is. Therapeutic is a really good way to describe it. The year that we went up there, I was in a pretty rough place stuff that I'm not really going to go into in this particular show because we don't have four more hours. But but I was really contemplating some things and some changes in my life and some stuff that was going on. And to take that little wink of time and just get among friends and not have to think about stuff and not have to, you know, not have to perform, not have to, you could just be there with people and just be yourself and just be relaxed. And it was just a really wonderful time. And I'm sure that's the way it was this year as well.
Pretty much, yeah. The difference between the first year and the second and third year is we've had people speaking, but the speaking, it's not like celebritarians are being booked to come out there and they're being paid and everything else. The people that are speaking are the people that are at the festival. As an example, Christian went up and gave a presentation both last year and this year, and I'm sad to say that I missed his presentation this year. I was doing something, and by the time I got over there, it was a question and answer period. And the only reason that Adam Kokesh wound up there was because he just happened to be in Michigan at the time, and somebody sent him an email, and he came out and added this stop. So he got there on Saturday night, pretty wore out from the road, got some sleep, got up Sunday morning and went up and did his presentation. I happened to be in the area, and that's how it came together. It wasn't something that was planned out in advance.
Hopefully he got some recharging of his batteries while he was there too.
Oh, I'm sure he did. One of the things that he had mentioned in his speech, and you have the link for that and you can put that in the show notes, was the type of environment that it is. It's people that engage in peaceful parenting, is people that engage in nonviolent communication, and they treat each other with respect. And there's absolutely no reason why this can't go on in the regular world, but people have to argue about, oh, well, you're an idiot because you vote Democrat. And the other person says, you're an idiot because you vote Republican. And, you know, I could very easily jump in and say, you're an idiot because you vote. But instead, you know, maybe the better way to say is, you know what, I hope you guys realize that kicking each other and yourselves in the shins every position, a new way to go about things, and choose to embrace real freedom. Not that limited freedom, but real freedom.
Yeah. Reject the whole leash. No, don't just ask for another few inches.
Right. And the leash doesn't get any better if you have a nice shiny collar to go with it. Oh, and speaking of leashes, there were a bunch of dogs there. I wanted to get all the dogs together for a group photo after the people group photo, but there were only like four of them that were over there. But I swear there were 20 dogs if there were one. And it was awesome. And most of the dogs played well together, you know, no barking, biting, or eating each other or anything like that. But there is a picture of me standing on the stand that we took the picture on. Mm-hmm. So we had some people that were sitting down and some people were standing on it, and some people were kneeling in between the people sitting and standing. But there's a picture of me standing on there, and I have like four leashes in my hand. And I'm thinking to myself, yes, one leash to rule them all. Because I had the picture with dogs. Oh, and by the way, somebody put a traffic pylon on top of my head with a plastic flower sticking out of it. So,
oh man, I got to get some of those pictures and put them over on Twitter.
Well, there's no bathroom pictures from Liberty Fest. That's something that's reserved for Pork Fest.
Yeah,
but yeah. Yeah, and Adam did a pretty nice presentation, and he was preaching to the choir with that crowd, but he talked about different ways to find freedom. And I have to say that there was, you know, some really good stuff in there. If there's anything that I disagree with him on, that is where the question came up of his running for president in 2020 or whatever it is, and having a peaceful disassembly of the federal government in going to the states. And as a matter of fact, I even asked him a question in there about whether that's watering the root instead of striking at it. And does it make the state more palatable and more tolerable because you've managed to get an incremental reduction? Not that incremental reduction ever really happens.
Right.
Because I mean, the best that you can hope for, you know, especially out of fiscal conservatives, is that no money is actually going to be cut. They're just going to promise to cut the planned increase
right
of what they're going to spend in the next couple of years. So essentially they're promising not to raise it as much as they would have, and they don't really tell you how much they would have raised it up. So for all you know, it stays what it was originally planned to be, or maybe it's more than it was planned to be, because, you know, big government conservatives, you know, fiscal conservatives, they love to loot, pillage, and redistribute wealth.
Yeah, I'm not going to bash Adam for some of the things that I disagree with him on. I will say this: Adam has come a tremendous distance. When I first became aware of Adam, this was way back in the early Ron Paul campaigns, around 2007 or so. And I would listen to Adam, and I thought, you know, this guy has a lot of really good stuff going for him. He's got a good personality. He's got a good image. He's full of energy. He's, you know, very enthusiastic. He's got a good voice. He enunciates well most of the time. He's got some really good positive things that he could do a lot of really good stuff with. But back then, you know, again, I'm talking like 2007 or 2008, that time frame, he was seriously confused on some things, but he changed. And this is the great thing about an honest person, is when you're presented with new information, you don't just cling to the old. You evaluate what comes to you and you say, hey, look at this. This is better than what I had before. And you adopt the new stuff. So there's no shame at all. And, you know, I think a lot of prominent people among us have come right out in the open and say, yeah, I used to be a statist, or I used to believe this, or I used to vote Republican, or I used to vote Democrat. But it's that increase of information, and that, you know, that forces us to be honest or to intentionally live a lie. And Adam has, you know, consistently done that. He has adopted truth as he was able to understand it. So he's come a tremendous distance since he first sprang on the scene. And there's also a level of maturity that Adam has developed that is really good to see. I'm glad for him, really.
Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not bashing him. I just simply disagree with him on a couple of things. And you and I have had disagreements on things. So it's, you know, there's no great man worship amongst us. it is what it is. But yes, he is a very wonderful communicator. And when he takes a stage, it's like he has a command of the audience. They're waiting with bated breath on his every word. And he delivers.
Yeah. Well, and it's not really necessary for us to agree on everything, because I believe in markets. And so I believe that wrong ideas and bad aspects of the market will eventually work their way out, and eventually the good ideas will dominate in the market. And so it's not important that I be right on every single issue today, and it's not important that somebody else agree with me on every single issue today. It's more important that we all move towards truth and right and so forth, and we do that as we change and we adopt, you know, modifications of what we believed in order to find that correct balance.
Yeah, I mean, we agree on the important stuff. You know, to use a food analogy, because I spend most of my time cooking at the fest, or most of my spare time, we both agree that we like chili. The question, you know, what we disagree with is how many jalapenos should be in it.
Yeah. And I should say,
and incidentally, I did make a venison chili on Saturday night, and I tell you what, oh my God, I had like four bowls of it.
I should say too that, you know, this is not an excuse for us. It's not a big open arms, big tent, use all those terminologies like that. We're not just accepting everybody into everything and everybody's right and, you know, nothing like that. What we're saying is you weigh things in the balance, and, you know, as long as your main points that you're standing on are zero aggression, non-aggression, you know, peacefulness, not forcing your ideas on others through voting and through, you know, aggression of the government and things like this, then we're all moving in the right direction. And so it's also, you know, there's a lot of people that are very famous that I really don't have anything to do with, because where they are off so far that I can't find that common ground with them. So I'm not saying we have to accept everybody, but Lou, you're okay.
I'll accept. Gee, thanks, Ben. You're okay too. Oh, gosh. I have a great non-Liberty Fest related story when we come back from this trip to the market. You're going to love it.
Cool. Stick with us, folks.
Listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hey, this is Squiskar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And Ask Me About My Worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1 1/4 inch. Now they're 1 3/4 inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
So tell me, Lou, what did you start to say before the break cut us off?
Going back to the last segment when we were talking about dealing with people without beating each other over the head, a non-Liberty Fest related story. A couple of concerned trolls in the neighborhood, and a concerned troll is somebody who's just concerned about everything and has to stick their nose in there, and let's just call them what they are, a couple of old biddies in the neighborhood, came around and they asked me to sign a petition. And as soon as I heard petition, my answer was no. And then I heard what it was for. They wanted the police to patrol the road that the front of my house is on. It's sort of a main highway of sorts, if you can really call anything up here in Bear Saskatchewan a main highway. But anyway, their complaint was that the truck drivers are going down that road very fast. They're speeding, and they're worried about our run. Legitimate concern of children being run over. But as soon as they said, have the police go out there and patrol, I started thinking to myself, my God, so this means that they're calling the neighborhood revenue generating. And the fact that they're going to be patrolling the neighborhood in revenue generation mode means that they might look inward at, you know, let's say somebody's lawn, and might take out a ruler and make sure that the lawn is the proper length. And they might just look for different code violations and ordinances and other stuff to generate revenue. So anyway, I'm thinking that, and then I'm thinking, you know, what about these poor truck drivers? Not that I'm seeing these truck drivers going through there during the day real fast. I mean, they go a little bit quick around midnight, but I don't think there's too many small children playing at midnight. At least they shouldn't be. So I'm thinking about this truck driver. Okay, he makes his livelihood off of his CDL. So if he gets a ticket for, you know, whatever violation it is, that means points on his residence license, and he can lose his livelihood.
Yeah.
So I'm all about keeping the I'm all about keeping the traffic slow, you know, in a residential area, and I don't want to see, you know, anybody get hurt. So before these old biddies were back to their house to gather up their signatures and turn it in, I took an old piece of cardboard and a Sharpie and wrote on it, speed trap up ahead, and leaned it up against a tree out in front of my house. It sat there for a couple of days, and then it disappeared. I don't know what happened to it. It might have blown away. A cop might have grabbed it. You know, there was no speed trap that I know of, but I'm pretty sure that people slow down. So by doing that, I slowed down traffic before these old biddies could even get the petition turned in. Nobody got revenue generated or road pirated. Nobody got points on their license or lost their livelihood. So, and I'm going down that street. I just picked up a pizza. And a few doors down from my house, I see a little sign out in the yard that says police up ahead. Isn't that awesome?
That is great. You know, too, yeah. There's another aspect of this. When they ask all the neighborhood to get together and beg the police to come and police the neighborhood, what they're really saying is, hey, we want to rob people in other neighborhoods to pay for us to have more police in our neighborhood. You know, they don't actually want to, like, hire private security to come out there. And maybe they don't want to hire somebody to build a nice professional sign that says, hey, truck drivers, this is a residential area with children. Please slow down. They don't want to take money out of their own pocket to do that. They want to rob people, like, on the other side of the state to pay for them to have more of their precious police.
Yeah, or they're too lazy to get out a piece of cardboard and a Sharpie and say, road piracy ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, if the goal is to trust it, what we need to do it is to have these little signs out there. And, you know, maybe they get to a point to where that, you know, they're like, yeah, there's no road, you know, no road piracy going on. That sign's been out there forever. But for the most part, they're going to think twice before going too fast. But the idea that somebody has to get a ticket and somebody has to get in trouble with the law is just horrible. And it goes back to a Alexis de Tocqueville quote, which I'm going to butcher right now. Americans would rather be equally enslaved than unequally free.
Oh, that's true. That's very true. That's a good quote. I don't think we say stuff like that enough, you know?
Yeah. Well, and here's the idea. I mean, people talk about, you know, all these regulations on businesses and stuff like this. And rather than saying, hey, let's make this an equal playing field and get rid of all these BS regulations so that nobody has to suffer, what they want people to do is they want to make everybody suffer equally. They want everybody else to get the regulations. It's as nonsensical as somebody says, well, I'm praying that the test gets canceled on Monday. Really, why don't you pray to pass a test?
Yeah. Or, you know, you're just told by your doctor that you have cancer and then you wish other people would have cancer too so that you wouldn't feel so oppressed. That's crazy. We'll be back, folks. Stick with us.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
There's the music.
Oh, yeah.
Freedom Fiends. So much truth. One of our taglines is so much truth it hurts. But I was thinking, we're pouring molten truth down upon you like pig's blood in what was that movie with the girl who imagined things with her mind and made things move? Do you know the movie I'm talking about?
Poltergeist?
No. Oh, Carrie. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to put together a new thing to say. So, like, pouring truth down upon you like pig's blood in a high school prom in Cary.
Dropping mad scientists like a B-52 strike.
Yeah. Raining truth like fire on Dresden. Ooh, too soon?
Oh, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That was, oh, man. The anniversary was recent.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but... Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about a Liberty Fest is you have a bunch of people that think and come up with solutions like we just talked about in this last segment when we took our little side trip. Come up with alternative solutions and ways to make things happen without, you know, using violence or without beating people over the head. And that's really an important way to successfully reach other people. So, like, one of the things that Adam talked about, you know, he mentioned the nonviolent communication, the peaceful parenting, the way that people interact with each other. And I know that you've mentioned it several times in the past, the respect and courtesy that people treat each other with, but also the sharing of ideas, mm-hmm. you know, of what's a good way to do this, what's a good way to do that. Very helpful to each other. One of the guys that was there, his brakes gave out. So he wound up having to go into town. Somebody took him into town to get some new brakes. And it just so happened that there was a guy from Ford Motor Company who he's an office monger now, but he spent a good number of years, you know, like doing engineering work or something like that, helped him change out his brakes.
Cool.
And so I took a picture of that, and the caption in the meme was, "I change my brakes every 50,000 miles, no matter where I am."
That's neat, though, when people get together like that and just and, you know, it's not just Liberty folks that do that. You see the kindness of people's hearts all the time. We see it a lot in campgrounds where somebody, we've been in several campgrounds when, unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of elderly people that are full-time RVers. And unfortunately, we've been in campgrounds a couple times when there have been a death, you know, natural death, elderly person. And it is really amazing to watch a whole campground full of strangers suddenly taking up a collection and doing everything they can to support, you know, the widow or whatever in a situation like that, and getting over there and doing stuff for them on their motorhome or whatever. And this is working for a stranger that you have almost nothing in common with. But this is kind of what humans do. It's what has made humans be able to survive through some of the really rough times that we've faced as a species.
Yeah, definitely. And it really goes to show how big of an idiot Thomas Hobbes was.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, for our listeners out there, think about this. How many times have you seen a collection bucket in a restaurant because somebody passed away or somebody was in the hospital,
right,
and you dropped a buck or two in there? And I mean, these things happen on a daily basis without any compulsory action or anything like that. Nobody's forced to do it, but people help each other out. It might be something as simple as opening a door for somebody who has an armful of groceries, or helping an elderly lady load groceries into the trunk of her car. So I mean, these things do happen.
Yeah, and they're not the exception. This is kind of how people function. It's universal. You see it pretty much all over that people work like that together.
Mm-hmm. And something else, and like at Pork Fest, you had free aid there. So if somebody has a minor injury or something like that, they can go over and get, you know, basic first aid treatment. And heck, before the Pork Fest a couple years ago even opened up, you did a tick ectomy on Tom.
Oh yeah,
removing the tick from his leg.
I forgot about that. So did Stephanie Murphy make it over to the Michigan thing this year?
Yes, she did. And I don't know if there was an actual free aid setup like there is at Pork Fest, but there was first aid kits available and there were people with knowledge. But yeah, she did a few Saturday, and I had every intention of getting over there on Saturday, but bacon.
Bacon happens.
Bacon. Yeah, my choice was to go to yoga or eat bacon, and, well, bacon wins.
Oh man!
But yeah, and it was a really nice time. She was out there hanging out, and you know, everybody loved chatting with her, and she spent a lot of time down at the lake goofing off down there with our friend Katie's kids.
Mm-hmm.
So she was kind of minding them every now and again. But as a matter of fact, she took this awesome picture of me holding the top of a bait container, and it said 30 worms on it. Is Walt's crawlers.
Oh, I saw that picture. Yeah.
Yeah, she saw that, and she's like, oh my God, I got to get this picture. And I'm like, huh? And I'm like, oh yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, my wife showed me that picture on Facebook.
Yeah. But yeah, Stephanie made it out there, and I don't think anybody else from New Hampshire made it out, but yeah, it was a really good time. Met some new people from Illinois. There's a young guy who did a podcast via Skype from out there. His podcast is Liberty Under Attack. His name's Shane. Nice young guy. As a matter of fact, just did a spot on his show.
Oh, cool.
So got to plug that.
Yeah.
But anyway, Cal Molinet from Liberate RVA came out, and that's Liberate Richmond, Virginia. And he did a little presentation, and of course I missed that one. The only presentation I got to was Adams. So, you know, spent a lot of time cooking, though.
Did we talk about Adams' presentation?
We talked about his presentation a little bit. He covered a lot of the regular stuff. One of the things that's neat is he's going around and he's passing out copies of his book. It's called Freedom, and his website is thefreedomline.com. You can't buy the book. The book's already been paid for. He did an Indiegogo campaign. You can't buy the book. You could download it for free as either an audiobook or a PDF off of his website. But anyway, he was giving out the books. I picked up a couple copies for people that couldn't make it. So those people, I have copies for you. You don't know who you are yet, but you know, you'll find out. And you know, he was, of course, accepting donations. So now the camper and the truck don't fill themselves up with fuel, so
right.
Helped him out in that regard. But one of the really neat things that he's doing is anybody who contributed at least $100 to his Indiegogo campaign, he's personally going to their house or their place of work and personally delivering copies of the book.
Cool.
And Not all these are like events or anything like that, but sometimes they just wind up being house parties. You know, they'll go over and say, "Hey, invite your five favorite status friends over," and you know, they'll have a conversation.
Now, there was something that you talked about with him in the interview. I meant to ask you about. Adam is an Iraq war veteran, and he came back with some damage over that, and he's taken a little bit of heat over that because there's people who say, well, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder is not a real thing, and there's accusations like that. But now I know what I deal with my little life that I've had, and I know some of the things that I struggle with on a daily basis due to some of the things that I've been through. And I can't imagine what it would be like going into a combat situation, have people, you know, things exploding around you and all of what goes with combat. But Lou, in your job, you see that stuff on literally a daily basis. And I wanted you to address this idea that post-traumatic stress is, you know, a made-up thing, or that it's, you know, it's more than just a, hey, you know, pull your dress up, Nancy, and stop whining, that kind of a thing.
I could give that the proper response that it deserves, but you would break your thumb on the cuss dump. because the idea that it's not real is complete utter bullshumor. All right, is Feinsteining bullshumor, and that's the simplest way to put it. To put it into layman's terms that everybody can understand, whether you're a combat veteran or not, the post-traumatic stress disorder is the impact of a particularly horrible event. Now, it may be something such as the loss of a friend or a relative or even a parent. You would be surprised the number of people that have really bad depression or anxiety after the loss of a parent, and it affects them for a long time. As a matter of fact, when my mother had passed away, I'd lost my grandfather, and then my mother passed away about 3.5 weeks later, and then my grandmother took ill a couple months after that, and shortly thereafter, I had my first anxiety attack, and I'm happy to say that I don't deal with that crap anymore, but I dealt with the anxiety for quite a long time, over a year. Fortunately, because I didn't treat it properly, it went into a long-term depression. And for those of you that have heard me talk about being homeless before, that's what led to it. So when you're looking at such a traumatic event, and something that people can reference is having the loss of a relative, you amplify and magnify that particular loss or that particular event, and it has such an impact on you. Now, one of the reasons that there's so much PTSD in like the Vietnam era veterans and the current ones as compared to, like, let's say World War One and World War Two. Most of the people in these latter wars are like 17, 18, 19 years old. They're not fully formed adults yet. I mean, they're legal adults. They're legal to, you know, go kill or die for their government. You know, just not legal to drink a beer, but at least not off base. But they're not formed. They're not developed yet. Many of them, they have very few life experiences. So you take somebody who comes from a nice suburban environment, and the only violence that they've seen is the Terminator movies or playing video games. They start seeing this stuff in real life, and it's a hell of a wake up call to them. And it really jumps up and slaps you in the face. And to participate in many of these things that do happen, you know, and it's unbelievable. It's very traumatic. And, well, I'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back from this trip to the market.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Sander Fien, the last segment of the Freedom Fiends for today, and we were talking about post-traumatic stress disorder prior to the break. My daughter Kai has come down here in southern Alabama and met with us, spent a few days. It's been about a year since we were around her, and so it's really good to, you know, when family gets back together and stuff like that. And last night, this being the first time that my daughter and I have spent any time together for, like I said, about a year. So last night we sat up and talked till about 1 o'clock in the morning. And my wife, you know, gets tired about 9 or 10 o'clock is it for her. So she goes on to bed. And so my daughter and I are sitting there talking, and we're talking about different things and what's going on in her life and stuff. And it got to where in the conversation she would be I would be saying, well, this and this and this is going on, and she'd say, and that's post-traumatic stress disorder, and I would kind of grin and, oh, I'm fine, and then there would be some more discussion, and then she would point it out again, and there would be some more discussion, and she would point it out again. And the reason why is because it's the kind of a thing that you can learn to live with it, and you can learn to manage it in different ways. But it's very real, and it's not necessarily based on absolute combat situations where the bridge is blowing up around you and there's body parts flying in your face. That's real, and that happens. But it can happen from all kinds of things. Auto wrecks, trauma that you see on a road where it's somebody else's wreck that you get a real hard look at. It can happen in a variety of different ways. And in my case, you know, I've had some people that really wanted me dead and took strong action to try to make that happen. And it affects your mind. It affects how you look at the world and how you look at other people. So it is absolutely real. And to deny that it's real when it's affecting you is extremely harmful. But it's also harmful when other people tell you that it's not real and tell you you just need to get over it or whatever. And that's kind of what you were addressing earlier, that with the frustration of people that don't really understand it.
Yeah, probably one of the most, probably the worst thing that I've ever seen in probably my lifetime as far as having an impact on somebody is the death of a child. For those of you that know people that have lost a child, that is not something that you easily recover from. That is something that really drains the living daylights out of people. But something that Adam mentioned was going through the therapy. Yeah, he mentioned the medical cannabis and, you know, disclaimer, you know, cannabis doesn't impact everybody the same way. It may work for you. It may not. It may make you more paranoid. It may not. So, you know, as you're doing this stuff, you have to do what works for you. But the one thing is going through the therapy and coming to terms with whatever it is that is causing the mental illness, whatever it is that's causing the PTSD, the depression, the panic anxiety disorder. You know, if you have paranoid schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, there are things that you can do. If you wind up taking medication for it, keep in mind that the medication is just the Band-Aid. It's not taking out the bullet from the wound and sewing it back up. It's just closing the wound up, and you still have that bullet in there. And for those of you that, you know, are of the mindset of, well, you need to man up, and you need to put on your big boy panties and quit being such a whiner. Mental illness is one of the things that is very easily misunderstood. My father didn't understand it, and the way his response to it was, well, don't be anxious, don't be depressed. And my response to him was, well, don't be a diabetic anymore, Dad. And he said, he looks at me like, what? I can't do that. I have no control over that. And I'm like, right.
Yeah.
Because when it comes to mental illness, it's not a visual injury. I remember meeting this young vet a number of years ago, and you know, he had PTSD really bad, and he says, you know what? I wish I would have lost an arm or a leg over there. That way, people would know that I'm wounded.
Yeah, I know that feeling very well. If there's no blood, yeah, they don't think there's an injury.
Yeah, nobody would yell at anybody for getting multiple sclerosis and call them, you know, tell them that they're, you know, being a sissy.
Yeah.
Or cancer or anything else. But I guess the redemption would be there is hope.
Yeah.
If you go through the therapy and if you work towards recovery, you can achieve it. And for those of you that are seeking recovery, I wish you all the best.
Good talking to you, Lou. Always good talking to you.
You too, Ben.